later today, The Savage Nation with Michael Savage at 6 p.m. Now, more of The Richard Bean Show on News Talk 1180 and the new 96.1 KERN.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 1:33 on a Thursday. Welcome back to the show. We just got through talking to the Cork Dorks about what's going on over at the Central Coast. I don't know about you, JR, but I hate... Did he say the high in Avila is going to be 80 tomorrow?
Something like that.
And what did he say about being 66 in San Luis?
I think that was the low, maybe?
Wait. Just rub it in. And then all the platitudes of I grew up in Shafter. Oh, well, whatever. He's over there in 66.
Doesn't degree. Say, but he got out.
He got out. And we're still here. I want to turn the attention to the story of the week, which is the death of local attorney Benjamin Green, who died Tuesday afternoon in a Bakersfield Track Club-sponsored 5K run over in Hart Park. And they do this regularly. And it has raised a lot of questions. He was apparently halfway through the run and collapsed and was rushed to the hospital and died there. I'm not actually sure where he died. His widow, of course, is grieving and upset. He had nine children, 48 years old with nine children.
Including that's a, triplets.
That's a busy man. Anyway, she was upset, and boy, she went on KGET, Channel 17, and it sure looked to me that she's got lawsuit written all over here. I've asked my friend David Cohn, managing partner of Chain Cohn Styles, to come in here, or Chain Law, to talk about this. And some of the questions to me are, I know that you sign a waiver when you do these things. What is the is that protection for the Bakersfield Track Club? And by the way, I did invite a representative of the track club to come on, and I haven't heard back from them. They're probably wisely not coming on. So what does a waiver mean? What does it mean? Is there liability beyond a waiver? I am told, and I don't know if this is true, I am told that the Bakersfield Track Club, the officers have directors and officers liability insurance, and they have a $2 million policy. Now, to me, I'm going to ask my friend Dave Cohn, who's sitting in front of me, if I know that somebody has a $2 million policy, that's like salt lick to a deer. I mean, that's like, that is a potential award up to $2 million. That just seems to me an added incentive, even though you need it. So Benjamin Green, 48 years old, nine children. Dave Cohn, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Richard. Nice to be here.
First, you knew Benjamin Green, right?
Yeah, yes, I did know him, and let me start out by saying that, my thoughts and prayers go out to his family. This is obviously very difficult on them, and I'm sure it's very trying times for them, and no one wants to have to go through this under any circumstance, so I wish them the best.
Now, he was a criminal a defense attorney, correct?
He did criminal law, and he did family law.
Oh, he did family law as well. Okay. Was he in business by himself, a sole practice?
Yeah, primarily.
Okay. All right. So tell me, Dave, when you have a case like this, do these waivers work? Are they airtight in the sense that you've got a track club, a lot of questions whether they should have called this thing off because of the heat. But you know as well as I do, Dave, and I know you. I've known you for a long time. You're an athlete, and oftentimes we will push ourselves, and we make those individual decisions. When we put ourselves under a harsh climate, you're pretty much taking on the liability yourself. And is it reasonable to expect a track club or whatever, a football practice, to provide kind of the protection from our own way that we push our bodies?
Well, let me first say that over the years, I have been involved in cases where people have signed waivers, and there have been times when we've been able to get around the waiver, because it depends on two things. with respect to waivers. Number one, how is the waiver written? And number two, what are the particular circumstances in how the person is either injured or, in this case, dies? So there's kind of a three-step process that I think you have to go through in this case. The first step is, number one, what's the cause of death? Because that is so important in a case like this. And that's not going to be known unless and until they do an autopsy. Now, it's my understanding that they're going to do an autopsy in this case. So that will help determine, you know, what did Mr. Green die from?
Now, let me slow you down. We're talking to Dave Cohn about the death of Benjamin Green. 842-5376 if you want to join the conversation, 842-KERN. Dave, who determines if there's going to be an autopsy?
Well, sometimes the family can ask for an autopsy. I've had cases where families have actually done their own autopsies. Other times, in a case like this, because Ben was such a relatively young man, the county may, on their own, decide that they want to do an autopsy.
Well, who makes that call? Does Donnie Youngblood make that call?
No, the coroner would make that call. And, of course, Donnie Youngblood is the coroner, but, you know, I mean, he's not involved in the day-to-day operations of the coroner's office. So someone within the coroner's office can decide on their own to do the autopsy. And if an autopsy is done as part of the protocol, what they're going to also do is a toxicological screen, which in this county takes, you know, several weeks to get back, but it'll tell you a lot of things, as will the autopsy. So again, you got to figure out what was the cause of death in this case, and that becomes an important issue in this sense. One of the things that I know his family has talked about in what I read in the paper is, well, they should have had a defibrillator out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a case right now involving a young man that died during an exercise class at Delano High School. And there was no defibrillator available. If, when you look at the cause of death, you might determine that even if there was a defibrillator, it might not have made any difference. That's why determining cause of death is really important. So let's talk about the waiver issue or the release issue. What's most important is, does it cover negligent conduct? Now, what little I saw in the Californian, and I'm sure it didn't necessarily cover the entire release, but what I noted in the California is they talked about the people that signed the waiver, it would waive any rights to damages to them, their heirs assigned. Well, the law clearly states that for a waiver to be effective, you have to be waiving negligent conduct. And, you know, I've not read that waiver, so I don't know what that waiver says.
The waiver has to state that you are waiving negligent conduct?
Absolutely. Look, for any waiver to have any validity, if you're going to waive your rights, mm-hmm. you have to be very specific as to what it is you're waiving away.
Mm-hmm.
And simply saying, I'm waiving damages, I mean, if that word negligent, in my opinion, is not in that release, I think that can have a
Let me try to follow you here. So, if it is determined that the Bakersfield Track Club was negligent by not having a defibrillator, and that is included in the waiver, then you're basically saying, I don't care.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if the waiver doesn't waive any negligent conduct on the part of the Bakersfield Track Club, then I think the Bakersfield Track Club has some serious problems, because you have to specifically waive negligence. In fact, I mean, there are cases that are, I mean, directly on point of that. I mean, waivers are so specific, and the language of the courts in cases over the years that have dealt with these issues, waivers even have to be in a specific font, a specific size type, for that waiver to be effective.
Well, that's what you would think, that if they
I don't think the size of the print is going to be the issue here. I think the issue is what is contained within that waiver, and if the language is somewhat wishy-washy, yes, that's exactly what I would look for if I was trying to undo the waiver.
If there's an autopsy, and let's assume there is, tell me what it would show that would both be harmful to the Bakersfield Track Club or, on the other side, help them.
Well, if it didn't, look, the obvious is, would the toxicology report show that there were drugs, let's say illegal drugs? I mean, I have no reason to say that there would be. That would be of benefit. Let's say there was some kind of Ben had taken some kind of a stimulant. And again, I have no basis to say that that happened. That could absolutely affect the cause of death. On the other hand, if it came back totally clean, yeah, that would be in the favor of his family. Mm-hmm. Just like if you did in doing the autopsy, they will check and they'll look at the coronary arteries. If they find, let's say they found massive blockage in the coronary arteries. Let's say they examine the heart and find that he had a heart attack. That all, again, has to do with his cause of death. And then that leads you down the path to, well, would it have made any difference whether there was a defibrillator?
Right.
Would it have made any difference if he was running in 70-degree heat? Look, I'm sure that the weather played a part in this. It may have played a very important part in this. So that's why the autopsy and the toxicological analysis would be pretty important in this case. But again, I mean, you really have to look at this waiver. I mean, the waiver has to be very clearly worded to basically shield the track club of this type of incident. Then you go into the issues of, okay, well, waivers will not shield you from gross negligence. So then, okay, well, what's gross negligence?
Yeah, define that for me.
Well, what the courts have said is that it's extreme conduct. Now, again, okay, well, what's extreme conduct? Well, okay, they didn't have aid stations. Well, in this case, they did have
aids. They did have, and they
right.
had more than normal.
They
right.
had aid stations, at least from what I read in the paper, they had aid stations. They were supplying Gatorade. They apparently had misters at the start and the turnaround, I guess. But again, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances. Sitting here talking anecdotally about what happened out there isn't going to tell you very much. And while you said, well, I can tell by listening to his widow that, look, I can tell she's lawyering up. You know, one of the things that I think attorneys do, which serves a purpose, is to get to the truth of what actually happened. And unfortunately, oftentimes, that the only way you're going to get to the truth is by filing a lawsuit, and which then enables you to ask a lot of questions, to get a lot of documents, to find out exactly what happened. And the fact that someone simply files a lawsuit to get to the bottom of what happened, I mean, obviously, I as a lawyer and doing this as a living, think that that's an honest way to approach something like this. You know, some people think, oh, it's, you know, it's a ambulance chasing lawyer that's just out there to make a bunch of money. It's the one true way that the family's ever going to be able to know what really happened.
Right. We're talking to Dave Cone. We're going to take a quick break here. Dave, when we were talking about the death of Benjamin Green 2 days ago in a Bakersfield Track Club sponsored 5K out at Hart Park. When we come back, Dave, one of my questions is going to be about this autopsy. I mean, if there's not an autopsy, that's a whole different ball of wax. But it sounds like whoever makes these calls, if this thing has potential, if it's potentially litigious, and it is a big local story, it sounds like they probably will have it. And we're going to talk more about that when we come back. 842-5376. If you have a take on this, what are the limits of liability that any volunteer-based organization, a cycling club, a track club, a bowling league might have? And do we live in such a litigious society that, as Dave says, the font and the size of the font on a waiver is important? I would assume that these guys at BTC had the proper waiver if you're going to do nothing else to hire a lawyer to protect you. Anyway, we're going to come back with Dave Cone, 842-5376, right here on News Talk 1180, the new 96.1 KERN, streaming live at kernradio.com.
The news and talk of Kern County, 1180 and the new 96.1 KERN. Up next, the Ralph Bailey Show from 3 till 6 p.m. Now, back to the Richard Bean Show on News Talk 1180 and the new 96.1 KERN.
Welcome back, everybody. 1:52, we're talking to David Cone about the tragic death of attorney Benjamin Green in a Bakersfield track club sponsored 5K out at Hart Park, and what, if any, liability does the track club have? Before we get into that, I do have some breaking news of sorts. There was a big pickleball tournament scheduled for the Bakersfield Racquet Club this weekend. Upwards of 100 players, I think the last was near 90, with you know, many teams, a seniors division, a doubles division, and a mixed doubles division. It has just been scrubbed. It is done in light of the death of Benjamin Green, the intense heat. They're going to reschedule it in the fall. I want to thank Paul Andre for calling me and alerted me to that. Art Sherwin, who is a coordinator of that, they made the decision it's best just to let it go. So no pickleball out there at the Racquet Club, but I'm sure some diehards will be out there playing. That's what I'm talking about, Dave. Some of us, you know, feel like if you need the exercise, you're just going to do it. The point you were going to make about the death of Benjamin Green.
Well, in addition to the release, there's another aspect to this kind of case, and that's what we call assumption of risk, which is a body of law that basically says that if you are involved in certain activities, you assume the risk of perhaps getting injured. And there's a very famous California case called Knight versus Jewett. Basically, that was a case where some people were playing flag football, and in the course of the game, a woman's hand got stepped on, and she lost a finger. So she filed a lawsuit. Well, the California Supreme Court said that when you engage in a sporting activity, such as flag football, it's to be expected that you might get your hand stepped on. Mm-hmm. So it becomes particularly relevant when you're dealing, like in this case, with a sporting activity. And it's really been stretched to the point that actually our Fifth District Court of Appeal came down with a case where someone was riding in a boat on a lake, and the person got injured. Well, that boat was pulling water skiers. Now, the person that got injured wasn't water skiing, but because water skiing was taking place, the person that got injured as just a passenger in the boat, the court said, no, you have no case, because it's anticipated that if you're riding in a boat where sporting activity is occurring, it's anticipated you might get hurt. So no case. So primary assumption of risk would apply in this case as well, because obviously this is a sporting activity.
Well, you know, I'm actually heartened to hear that, Dave, because, I mean, in the sense that, do we get to the point where nobody will do anything because if something happens, I mean, you do assume if you go out, and I don't care how, if you're 17 or 48 or 68, you and I ride bikes together occasionally. We assume a risk when we go out there, and we know that, we know that bad stuff could happen. And if it's a sponsored event, if I get, as long as I'm doing everything right and something bad happens, the idea that you'd go back on the organizers is problematic to me.
Well, let me give you a perfect example of a case I had a couple of years ago. I had a young man that was riding on a motocross track over on the coast, and he went over a jump, and unbeknownst to him, at the bottom of that jump was a tractor that was grading a part of the track. And I can only tell you what happened when he hit the back of that tractor. Well, there was a waiver in that case, or excuse me, there was a release signed in that case. Mm-hmm. But you're not, the release didn't cover the fact that when you're on a motocross track, you're not expecting to come over a jump
and have a tractor
right. sitting there. So a release isn't going to cover that.
That's what you're talking about, the gross negligence.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. It's not that, Richard. It's the fact that that release contemplates that if you're riding in a motocross race, you might go off or you might hit another motorcycle, fall off, whatever, you're going to get hurt. It's not contemplated while you're on the track that you're going to hit a tractor. You don't expect a tractor supposed to be on a track. That's not something that you would anticipate.
Right.
Here, you've got to look for, whatever evidence there might be of something that occurred that was outside of this activity.
Well, and I think can you stick around after the hard break?
Because
there's a couple points I haven't gotten to, but I think in this case, the tractor is the heat that the family certainly believes that were it not for the heat, and we don't know that, and maybe you do have to have an autopsy to prove it, but were it not for the heat, there would have been a different outcome. So,
well, I don't know. I see the tractor being, or I see the heat being more an issue of gross negligence.
Okay. All right. Dave, you're going to stick around. We're talking about the death of Benjamin Green. I have a couple more questions about the role of attorneys when they're dealing with very emotional survivors in this and the advice that you give them. We're going to be right back here, 842-5376, if you want to join the conversation. You're listening to The Richard Bean Show here on News Talk 1180, the new 96.1 KERN. And always remember, we are streaming live at kernradio.com. Welcome back, everybody, and good afternoon. It is 2:05 on a Thursday, this 22nd day of June 2017. You're back with The Richard Bean Show. That would be me, your host, and thank you for joining us here. We have another 60 minutes of news and talk, so just sit back and relax because we have a lot on our agenda here. We've been talking to David Cohn, who is the managing partner of Chain Law, Chain Cohn and Stiles, one of the preeminent plaintiff's law firms in town, about the liability, potential liability. How does it work legally when you're a group like the any organization, in this case the Bakersfield Track Club, you host an event in 170-degree weather in the afternoon, a 5K at Hart Park. You seem to have done everything right. You increase the number of water stations. There are misters. And somebody called a local attorney, Benjamin Green, who's 48 years old with nine children, collapses and dies. What does that mean? What does that look like? Dave makes his living off these type of cases. Before we go any farther with Dave Cone, we do have a caller. We have Lisa on line one. Lisa, welcome to the Richard Bean Show. Did you have a comment about the case?
Yes, I did. I actually happened to be at Hart Park that day. I saw the ambulance have to drive into Hart Park. I thought it was just another, you know, swimmer that got into the lake or the river. And they were there for quite some time until I saw them drive out code 3. And I have actually, I kind of know of Benjamin Green a little bit, really very disturbing. Right, here's my comments. With regards to the waiver, there were many, many advisories, public service announcements, saying that, you know, it was an extreme heat condition, and they were basically warning everybody this was highly dangerous, and I would wonder if that would have any kind of bearing over and above the waiver. The other thing is, did the waiver have any kind of language in it stating that they would advise people not to compete if they had any pre-existing medical conditions? And that's what I'm wondering about, those two issues.
Okay, thank you for the call. Lisa, one last question. Did you run in this event?
No, I did not. I was actually walking around the lake, and a friend of mine, he was actually hiking up in the mountains above, and we had discussed that it might be a little bit difficult, you know. But I was being very careful, and my friend is very experienced, and I know everybody's different. But, we were doing this on our own.
Right, right, okay.
And I only went around one time. And like I said, I've seen a lot of things go on around Hart Park lately, and I just thought it was just another person that got into the river and got swept away, because it's been happening a lot lately.
Yeah, right. They've been fishing people out of that river every weekend.
But the thing is, when you've got you know, extreme weather warnings on the national or state level or whatever, that would seem to me a good indicator to the people who are sponsoring the event to cancel it. And so that's telling them, you know, that this is too dangerous. I mean, it's kind of like, if you have an event saying jump into the burning pit or drink the Kool-Aid with the cyanide, you think the waiver is really going to make people sometimes follow the leader.
Right, right.
And I don't think a simple waiver is just enough. Sometimes there's peer pressure. I think Mr. Green had peer pressure on him, the pressure to compete, the pressure not to let people down. Obviously everybody's different on their, you know, their
right.
physical makeup is different, but...
Well, and the pressure we put on ourselves to stay in shape, a lot of these lawyers, like the guy sitting in front of me, Dave Cone, are very innately competitive people and don't back down easily. Let's turn that question over to Dave Cone.
Yeah.
Lisa,
one thing. Okay. Why wasn't Hall Ambulance on site? That's what I'm wondering about. They could have been on site since there was an extreme advisory of heat. You know, why weren't they on site? A lot of times they will just perch around Tom and sit there and wait. That would have been a perfect place for them to be at Hart Park that day.
Interesting point. Thank you for the call, Lisa.
Thank you.
I'll say, Dave, there's three questions there. The last one was, why wasn't Hall Ambulance there? You see, actually, you know, Hall Ambulance and other providers at football games and stuff, because they know that they need to be close if something happens. The second question was, the heat was a well-known public hazard. How does that play into it that they didn't cancel it? And the third question was, where'd I go with that?
Yeah. The third question was whether or not it should have been in the release that if you have
a pre-existing condition or something like that.
Right.
Over to you, Dave.
So, Lisa, thank you very much for your questions, and I certainly understand your point of view. My view with respect to whether or not they should have had an ambulance present, that issue goes to whether or not there's simply gross negligence on the part of the track club. That is part and parcel of whether or not the track club should have even hosted this event because of the weather. I view those two as being kind of the same issue. Again, whether or not this rises to the level of gross negligence on the part of the track club, whether it's, you know, extreme bad conduct on the part of the track club, and to some extent, it can be kind of a question of fact. I mean, ultimately, a judge would have to look at the circumstances surrounding what happened and make a call as to whether or not the fact that there wasn't an ambulance, the fact that it was extreme heat, whether or not the track club did something by allowing this event in with this weather, whether that is extreme conduct. And, you know, I think people might come down on both sides of that argument.
Well,
and with respect to the waiver, no. I mean, your waivers don't have to say if you've got some physical problem, you shouldn't be doing that, or you shouldn't be engaging in this kind of conduct. I mean, you're supposed to be smart enough to know on your own whether or not there's something physically in your makeup that would make running in heat to be very harmful to you. So I don't think that has to be in the waiver. The waiver simply has to cover negligent, you know, in order to shield the track club, the waiver has to say that, you know, you're not going to sue the track club if there's negligence on the part of the track club. Now, is negligence not having an ambulance present, or is that gross negligence? Is negligence allowing the race to even take place, or again, is that extreme conduct? I mean, those are issues that are going to have to be fleshed out in a lawsuit if that's what the family decides to do.
Dave, talking to Dave Cohn of Chain Cone Styles about the death of Benjamin Green. Dave, if there is an autopsy, and it sounds like this is a case that really cries out for it, and part of that autopsy is a toxicological report, what's the time frame on that? How long does all that take?
Well, the autopsy's done fairly quickly. I mean, we get autopsy results back usually within 3 or 4 weeks. The tox reports, because the county sends them out, I mean, sometimes it takes, you know, 3 or 4 months to get the results back.
Now, as if you were the family,
and by the way, the family could run their own as well, because if the coroner's office does an autopsy, this coroner's office is very good about retaining samples. So when we've had cases where the coroner's office has not only done an autopsy but also done toxicological screening, we have access to the tissue samples. We have access to blood and any other specimens that the coroner may collect. So, I mean, we've oftentimes run our own just to see whether or not there are differences, and had outside pathologists look at tissue samples, and sometimes there are discrepancies.
So let's be clear, we don't know. We're speculating. I'm dealing with the hypothetical here. But as a lawyer, Dave, if the tox report comes up and shows that there's some other problematic substances in his system, if the autopsy reveals that he had a heart disease to maybe late stage or whatever for a man his age, all age appropriate, whatever, that there was a narrowing of the arteries, are these slam dunk events that there's no case?
Well, many times there are no slam dunk cases. I mean, look, if you look at the issues that we've been discussing today, it's certainly not black and white. Yes, but I would say, yeah, if there were certain substances in anybody's system, I mean, let's say it was something like, you know, methamphetamine, for instance. Yeah, that becomes very problematic.
And what is the role of an attorney when you have the survivors who are often emotional and maybe looking to blame somebody, and like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they didn't cancel the event. I can't believe that they didn't have an ambulance there. What is the responsibility of the attorney in this case to really talk sense into a potential client?
Well, number one, I think it's important to be empathetic and to understand the emotional trauma that the family suffers. But number two, you're supposed to be objective enough in looking at the evidence, because that's what, as lawyers, that's what we deal with, the evidence, and be willing to tell the family if the evidence is not favorable, you have to explain that to the family. On the other hand, if the evidence is favorable, then, you know, obviously you're going to share that with your client as well. But I think right out of the box, you're dealing with a family that's very distraught, a family that's very emotional. They're obviously upset. And I think the most important thing is to, you know, try to be somewhat reassuring and try to calm them, and then explain the process to the family and say, look, this is going to take some time. This doesn't happen overnight. There's a process that we go through in gathering evidence, and, you know, kind of let the chips fall where they may.
Last question, and we're talking to Dave Conan. Thank you for coming in. We were talking in the break. You took me to task. As a layman, I mentioned before you came in on the show that, and I didn't mean to be crass about this, but are two lives ever equal from a lawsuit standpoint? If you have a $2 million, I don't know what the Bakersfield Track Club's liability policy, but let's say it's $2 million, $1 million, pick your number, as opposed to nothing. As in your line of work, of course, any death is a tragedy, but you guys in your line of work are going to gravitate to where the money is, and that's going to get your attention. So in that sense, if certainly the lives are equal in terms of the family and the survivors, but you guys are going to go for the money, right? I mean, as a way to reward the family for negligence.
Well, is the ability to recover damages for a client important? Well, that, of course, that's important in a case. I mean, unfortunately, lots of times there are very meritorious cases with very serious, where there may be very serious injuries, someone may be killed, and all those cases deserve fair and adequate compensation. A lot of times there isn't fair and adequate compensation because there's simply no means or ability to be able to provide that to either the person who's seriously injured or the family that's lost a loved one. But, I mean, understand that everybody's life has value. I don't care who that person is. Now
I'm talking about recoverable monetary value.
Well, look, insurance is obviously the primary vehicle by which we're able to recover damages. It's very seldom, if there's been a very serious injury, or in this case, someone who's tragically kills or who dies, that an individual has the wherewithal to be able to adequately compensate either the person who is injured or the family. I mean, it's pretty rare. It's doesn't happen very often. And I can think of just a very few times in my 41-year career where I actually recovered damages from someone individually. It almost never happens. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy, frankly, to simply file bankruptcy, and that's the end
right,
of it.
Right, that's why the insurance is so important. Dave Cohn, thank you for joining us here and shedding some light. I appreciate your expertise on this. It sounds like we need to. I mean, crassly, I will say, if you're the family looking to sue, you probably don't want an autopsy. I mean, I'd have this guy cremated like this afternoon. But probably that will happen. We'll wait on the tox report, and we'll take it from there. These things are important because we have a lot of the track clubs, just like the Kern Wheelmen, so many different organizations that put on organized events and their shoestring operations. Generally, they'll have directors and officers liability insurance of some sort. But this is always a tug of war between what their responsibility is. And as I mentioned, the Bakersfield Racquet Club just canceled their pickleball tournament this weekend. It was supposed to start at Friday afternoon through Sunday because of the heat. So these are calls. We'll see where this goes. Dave Cone, thank you for coming on.
Richard, thank you for inviting me.